Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, I know you never want to be negative.
I don't. I don't like to be negative, Tony.
I know you don't, but today's the day. Today is the day. We're going to take the power of negativity and we're going to turn it into, and this is not a self-help program.
I was going to say, what has happened to the program? I thought we were talking about food and
this
wine.
This is Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine.
Are you going to be counseling us now, Tony? Because
no,
I don't think I'm ready for that.
No one wants my counseling. That's for darn sure.
That's correct. All right. So
not unless you're choosing between county producers.
Well, there you go. Yeah. That's the only counseling we want from you.
Exactly. Okay. But no, we're going to take negativity and we're going to turn it into something really positive.
Okay. And what is that?
Everyone is a child, and sometimes bleeding into adulthood, they have problems with food. They have problems with dishes they don't like. I can still hear my father's voice saying, yeah, I just don't like fish.
Sure.
You know, everyone has these things, and they hang around. And so why does my dad not think he likes fish? Because I watched him really enjoy fish sometimes. It's because when he was a kid, they ate fish on Fridays, and my grandmother, his mother, was maybe not a talented cook with fish.
Let's just say. That's just mean.
And it's not mean. She was amazing.
Well, she was
amazing. Maybe not amazing with fish. And my dad did not
love
fish.
Yes.
And so that kind of carried over. And I mean,
I didn't like fish when I was a kid either because I grew up in Indiana. There was no fish. Well,
it's not illegal to have fish in Indiana.
There was lake fish. But, you know, I grew up on cod and scrod. The two odds, and I tell you what, I hated
fish. The two odds.
Yeah, cod and scrod.
The two odds.
And oh my gosh, my mom would cook the heck. My mother was a very good cook, and I don't know what it was about fish. Maybe just everybody thought you had to cook it well done. Actually, I'm certain that's what it was. And she would, oh gosh. Okay, I dislike raw onions to this day. Okay, you cannot make me eat
a
raw onion.
Okay, I'm hoping that you're going to give a dish like it.
Oh, I thought I was giving you products. Okay, I came up with five products.
Oh, I know you got products.
I have five products. I do not have five dishes.
I watched you get over products that you don't like.
I can come up with one. Meatloaf. Don't make me meatloaf. Ever.
That's please. You put it on the list, I'm going to make you meatloaf.
Oh.
So, because I'm going to give you my list of five things that dishes or preparations that if this showed up on a restaurant menu or like it was a matter of like, you can eat this or you can starve, you know, no dinner, just go straight to bed. I'm definitely going straight to bed, no dinner. Okay, I have my list.
Okay.
You give me your list.
Okay.
But I think people have to fight these things.
Well, I think
that's why the program is actually about positivity. Not
negativity. And one of the other things I was talking to a friend of mine about the other day who has young kids, I said, you know, I think it's just because actually we were talking about cod and scrod, and I was also talking about my mom used to make cube steak. I can barely allow those words to cross my lips.
My grandmother bought cube steak once in a while.
That was very popular when I was a kid, and I hated it. And my mom would do green bell peppers and fried onions on there. And I also dislike bell peppers immensely. That was one of my items. So now I guess I have a dish now, cube steak with onions and peppers on it. And let's just go right to my first dish.
Go right. That's your first dish.
That I don't like. I can't wait to hear you fix that, Tony.
Well, cube steak is it starts with the product, right? Cube steak is meat that's been pierced a whole bunch of times.
Yeah.
It's not a nice piece of meat. It's not.
It's been tenderized.
It's not particularly flavorful.
Well, the problem is when and I don't even know if they still make this cut of meat, but I mean, or do this to this cut of meat, but when they did used to tenderize it, I mean, it was literally it looked like a waffle. I mean, it was so over tenderized.
Exactly.
They
have this little machine
bizarre.
That like has all these what looks like little needles. It's like some terrible scary movie from the early 80s or something. They put this meat that you don't want to eat underneath that, and they pierce it with, you know, 100 of these things. And that piercing of the meat supposedly is supposed to make it tender. I don't know how it makes it tender. I would just think it's just suffering more. And if you have a piece of meat that's relatively tough, if you have a piece of meat that's relatively tough and it doesn't have a tremendous amount of flavor, it occurs to me you can only do two things. You gotta figure out how to cook it for a while. Okay, this is not something you're going to serve rare, medium rare. And you've got to figure out how to develop some flavor. And if it doesn't have that much internal flavor because there's not that much fat, you're going to have to do a pretty good job caramelizing it. These are little pieces for some kind of braised dish. Or these are pieces, I mean, to me, immediately it seems like the beginning of some kind of a beef sauce for a pasta or something. That might be the natural, that might be the natural thing. Some kind of wide noodle like pappardelle. That's kind of an easier one to make, and it's a little bit thicker. Taking nice even cuts of these, once you caramelize them nicely and braise them a little bit, it could just even be relatively shallow.
Yeah, and I mean, I definitely know she floured it and quickly sauteed it, and they were just, it was awful.
Yeah, no, I mean,
I used to cry when we
caramelizing
had
that for in a heavy pan and a steel pan and a,
oh,
and a big thick copper pan.
I mean, well,
pan,
what a massive kind of difference to make something that's braised versus, you know, something that like that that
seasoning
was quickly
sauteed.
Yeah.
Having seasoned it a little before it goes in the pan with a little bit of vinegar, a little bit of acid, a little bit of wine.
I wish she had braised it, because then she always used to do, like, if we had roast beef when I was really little and I was still at home at lunchtime, wasn't in school, we would have soft white bread, and she would put slices of the roast beef, and she would make gravy and put it over the white bread. I think that, I don't know if that's like just old fashioned or if it's left over from being in Pennsylvania or what, but oh man, when I was a little girl, I loved that. That was so good. Mostly I just liked the gravy on the soft bread.
I knew you would have childhood food feelings about this program.
Mm-hmm.
So that's perfect. But anyway, so you have the quote unquote cube steak, and but now you have it braised the day before, you know, seared nicely, caramelized on all sides, braised the day before, left to sit in a moist environment overnight, sliced thin, maybe into cubes, you know, and then caramelized again in the pan to make a proper sauce, something almost like a ragu with mirepoix and a little bit of red wine and some garlic that seasoned that pan a little bit to start with. And that, you know, that and a little bit of stock if you have it to put in there, and some butter to finish. Yes, I said butter.
Mm-hmm.
With that nice pappardelle and fresh cracked pepper, and maybe, you know, we use the onions up in the mirepoix.
Mm-hmm.
But that gives you a nice, comforting wintertime pasta dish that could be kind of easy.
Yeah, I love my father very, very much, and I was always astonished when I was little. I guess Wonder Bread was a big thing when I was little, and he would have like a white bread sandwich with just a huge slice of raw onion on it, and he loved it. He just loved it. I think he'd probably been eating that since he was a child. And I couldn't even handle that. I just hate raw onions.
Yeah,
really.
That's
dislike them immensely. I might eat a...
Braunschweiger and onion. That's a... Mm. Braunschweiger onion and a lot of mayonnaise or on buttered toast Braunschweiger onion.
Well, that's
onion.
The other that's thing. He would put butter. He would put butter on the bread, and then he would put a thick slice of onion. And he also loved spring onions. I remember when we would leave North Carolina, when we were living in North Carolina, we would go visit their families in York, and we would always stop at Market, and they would get all the things. And also at the grocery store, because there were things when I was really little that my mom, you know, just didn't come up. To North Carolina from there. So at the grocery, so there were a lot of things, but definitely one of them, my dad would get really excited when he saw spring onions in the market.
So the grocery in New York was the Smalls?
I honestly can't remember what it was called.
Because it was probably Winn-Dixie or Piggly Wiggly when you were in North Carolina.
Well, yeah, and that's correct.
And these when there were little tiny regional grocery stores, right?
Yeah, I can't think of the name of it in York, but we would go to Eastern Market or Central Market in York and get Fosnox and Lebanon, Bologna, and there were a lot of the candy companies that were there when my father's family had a stall in the market. My grandfather was
like,
a butcher. And,
I always wanted to like Lebanon, Bologna. It just always smelled a little bit like cigarettes to me.
I don't know. They loved it. It was just something that they grew up on that they really enjoyed. I like Lebanon, Bologna, too, actually. I think it's mostly from having it as a child and, you know, sweet Lebanon, Bologna, too. But, yeah, my dad or his family had a stall in Market. Their butcher shop did, so he was used to all the vendors there, and some of the companies were still, you know, around when I was a child. So I think that was a big reminiscing, you know, just really walking back into his own personal history for him and for my mother.
Your market there was a little bit like Lexington Market for me as a kid.
Sure, I'm sure.
So I've got the first item on my list of...
What is yours?
And I will admit my list I titled with Stuff I Hate to Eat, which is, I guess, not very forgiving. But shepherd's pie is the first thing on my list.
Okay, I could make a very good shepherd's pie.
And you're very, very talented, and I believe you. And I believe you. And I see the look in your eyes.
Oh, boy.
I'm thinking, that's great.
Actually,
And you go to put it in front of me, and...
You're just not into it.
No.
Was that something that was made from scratch, or did you have to eat something that was
maybe
purchased?
I just had a lot of versions of it.
Uh-huh.
I've had a lot of versions of it, and mostly I've had really bad, like, restaurant versions of it. Like, I've tried to get over it.
That was popular when we were kids.
Because I tried to get over it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not... I kind of pride myself on eating a lot of things, not being scared of food, not being... like. And this is a basic thing, and I've hated every version I've ever had, pretty much. And the restaurant versions that are trying to be too clever, usually there's something that was screwed up along the path.
I just like the idea of having ground lamb in it. So if you had ground lamb and you seasoned it nicely and you sautéed your onion and butter and browned off your ground lamb in corn oil and seasoned it just quite simply with salt and pepper, you don't have to do, I mean, sure, you could put fresh rosemary or fresh thyme in there. You know, you would probably come up with a fancy answer to this, but I don't think it's necessary.
I don't have a fancy answer to it. I still have
Okay. So a good potato puree, just a really good, you know, Yukon Gold potatoes, cream, butter, a lot of butter, a little salt and pepper, and, you know, make your pie with an excellent potato puree, a really good ground meat and something that's seasoned and has good flavor, and then make a good tarto. I think that's all that shepherd's pie is supposed to be, and you know, what could be wrong with that? Maybe some vegetables, you know, but I wouldn't do it. I would just do the ground meat and the potatoes.
So meat and potatoes and
so
pie
what
crust.
Did your shepherd's pie have in it?
I mean,
did it have a lot of vegetables or
well,
not?
Well, a lot of times there would be some kind of a
or am I thinking
stewy,
of pot pie?
Stewy gravy pot pie, but people would make pot pie kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not so pot pie oriented either.
Well, but it's like, again, that's the other thing. In my family, pot pie was you stewed a chicken and you made chicken stock and you pulled the meat from the chicken. And that broth, you make your own handmade dough, just like you would pasta, basically.
So it's essentially chicken soup with the pie crust on it.
You roll out the dough just like you would pasta. And you cut it into, my mother cuts it into diamonds. And she drops those diamonds into the boiling water and cooks it just like you would pasta, only you're cooking it in chicken broth, and then it stays in the broth. So it's squares of thinly rolled out, beautiful dough cooked in this chicken stock. That's how I grew up on pot pie. I don't know anything about the kind of pot pie where it's in a dish with pastry dough over it. That's not how I was raised. So, and then she would put the chicken meat back in. And I, honestly, that was that and sauerkraut and pork were two of my very favorite dishes when I was a little girl that my mom made.
It's sauerkraut and pork. No problem. Love it.
Loved both of those.
Yeah, the shepherd's pie versions that are a little bit like mm-hmm. what people often would make for pot pie, which is kind of a stewy something
mm-hmm.
with a pie crust on top of it, or a soupy something with a pie crust on top of it. You know, that version inverted with mashed potatoes on it, and the potatoes wouldn't have any flavor, or they wouldn't be seasoned.
Okay, well, that's the whole ball game.
Or they would have egg added to the potatoes, and they'd be kind of browned a little bit.
You wouldn't want the egg in there. No.
No.
Not in that element. No.
No.
Certainly not, because they're going to steam in there and egg's not going to do a good thing.
I like the idea of the lamb.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, I don't like the idea of the crust. Okay?
Well, that's it. I mean, I think what you really want is a gratin dish, like a circular gratin dish that has a layer of ground meat mixed with a little bit of onion and then a layer of potato that you actually gratiné, you know, maybe even put a little Reggiano on top and gratiné it. And I mean, no, okay, that sounds like a pretty simple, good dish Sunday night.
That's enormously better. If you just take the pie dough and throw it out the window, you've improved the dish 500% for me.
All right. Well, there you go. Okay.
Yeah. Please don't throw the pie.
All right. Well, my next one. So we started to talk about cod and scrod, so we're going to have to go back to that's one of the dishes that I hate, which she would, like I said, she tried. She really did. She tried. I adore my mother. But it would go into a glass Pyrex. I can see it in the oven now, a glass Pyrex dish cooked. And the other thing is that she would bake it for like 30 minutes.
And it's just looking
and
at
no
you
piece
in the
of
oven
fish.
Light.
Right. Should be cooked for
Cindy?
30 minutes that size. Right.
Cindy, you're going to have to finish
Help
it all
me.
Or you won't be able to leave the kitchen ever and play again.
Well, I did grow up in the family where you sat at your plate of food until it was eaten. And there were many
we'll
nights
never play
when I
again.
Was... Uh-huh. There were many nights
Eat
where
this fish.
I
we'll never play
was
again.
Still there at 8:30. And we ate at dinner at 5:30 every night.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I hated
peas. You're not hard-headed at all, though.
No, it wasn't that. I was a born chef. I didn't want to eat anything that didn't taste good.
Is that what you said to your mother when
you were
8 years
old? It was
like
torture to me. No, I never knew then I wanted to be a chef. I didn't know I wanted to be a chef until I went to college.
When we come back on Former Wolf on Food and Wine, we'll try to solve Cindy Wolf's cod and scrod nightmares from childhood. All of that and more on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're trying to get past a few of the things we don't like to eat. The childhood food traumas. Trying to maybe repair those dishes, let's say. Not fix the dishes. Repair the dishes that offended us at some point along the years. And
wow.
And bring them to a better place.
I do have to say one ingredient that it has to be an ingredient because I could not, I mean, you know when this turned around for me. I could not stand olives. And it was because my mom liked olives and she would buy those olives in the can that were just back in the day that you know, there just weren't any choices. Yeah. So they were these awful, geez. I mean, I just couldn't even imagine eating how horrible those were to eat.
There was a certain flavor of chopped up truck tire in those olives. Yeah.
Oof. And then, you know, we go to Italy, and I'm like, really? These are amazing. I mean, you know, olives are one of my favorite things to eat.
And they grow on trees.
Really?
Yeah. Sorry,
that was cool to see. It was very cool to see the olives growing on trees, especially when we were near Moliteri? Yeah. Moliteri. And they were picking.
Yeah.
They were picking when we were there. So that was fantastic to see. I love
watching
that.
Them. Shake everything off the
tree. Yeah, so that was super cool. Yeah, I love olives.
World's biggest blankets, the olive pickers.
All olives.
I will admit one of my all-time favorite gags to do to anyone on a trip, because maybe I'm not the nicest single person in the entire world, every moment of every day, was to give a certain interior designer, and like, try this olive. It's fresh off the tree.
I know who that is.
And
you
and
gave
of course,
him an olive, a fresh I olive sure off did. Of a tree. Was he all excited?
Ladies and gentlemen, when you go to Italy or Spain or south of France, don't pick an olive off a tree and try to bite it because it's going to be really bitter and just horrendous.
Mostly
and
you won't be there to give it to them, so they probably won't even think of doing
you
that.
You want no parts of it.
Yeah.
That mm-hmm. They need to be brined. They need to be softened up and
so what's
need to be brined.
So what's the difference?
The reaction was remarkable, though. This is a dramatic person.
Well,
so.
And he had probably just eaten at Moliteri, too, so...
No, this is before.
Oh,
so
it was before
starved.
Dinner or lunch? That was lunch.
We were talking about how great the
food
is
going to
be.
Honestly, that's one of the best eating stories I've ever heard in my life, the first time you went there.
When people have to go out and roll around on the ground between courses because they've eaten so much food and they know there's more coming to try to move
and,
their...
And one of them was a chef?
To try to move his digestion along, He was just literally rolling around, writhing in pain
from a massive quantity of food.
And I'm like, don't worry, that was just pasta,
and that was
there. Are at least two meat courses coming, and they were giant, biggest chicken legs I've ever seen in my entire life. So, let's go back to cod and scrod.
Oh yeah,
your best friends from childhood.
30-minute cook time, raw onions, not sautéed before they went on there. I mean, it had butter and lemon, so there's nothing wrong with that. But that poor fish was...
That's
I
tough.
Can't remember what she would serve with it. Oh, I know. Another dish that really, really freaked me out when I was little was my mom didn't know how to make rice. So, and I will say again, I love my mother, and she's a very good cook. So she would try to do things that were unusual for that time. I mean, so we're talking about the 1970s. And a lot of things weren't available either. I mean, like the best... grain rice wasn't available at that time, really. And she would make sweet rice. Oh, God, it was so gross. It was milk and sugar and rice. And it might as well have been rice pudding. I mean, it wasn't part of my childhood. It was awful.
And I'm upset hearing it.
And again, rice is one of my very favorite things to make in the kitchen. And I make all kinds of rice. And I just can't imagine that I don't know. You know, and I think it's just, again, coming from that German, Pennsylvania, Dutch background that, you know, that was nothing. She never had them when she was a kid. So she was just, you know, she was trying to do the best she could. And but that was definitely, I mean, I thought I hated rice until I became, you know, older and a cook and realized or started to travel and realized that, oh, yeah, okay, this is what, well, rice, actually in Charleston, that's what I learned about rice.
You have a lot of feelings. Mm-hmm. Let's take you back to the cod and scrod.
Okay.
Scrod, I think, is almost impossible to buy not frozen in a lot of the U.S. unless you're around the Great Lakes. Even around the Great Lakes, I think it ends up being frozen a lot of the time.
I was
going to
say, I'm pretty sure what she had was...
I
don't think my mother would have bought frozen fish. Now, whether it was frozen before she bought it, that's another story.
Yeah,
but I don't think my mom would ever have bought anything frozen.
It's like when you... Orange Ruffy is all frozen before it comes to the States, gets thawed out, and they're selling it as it's fresh. Chilean sea bass is another.
Was. I don't know if it still is.
But scrod is something that doesn't have a tremendous amount of flavor. Good fresh cod can be remarkable. That can be great fish. And that's there's a reason that that is like a dominant thing in and around Mediterranean cultures, and especially in Spain in particular, you know, bacalao.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fish where when you get a nice fillet, you want something that's relatively thick. That's something that you want to sear nicely on the outside. You don't really need butter involvement. The fish is good and juicy to start with. But sear that in a steel pan, nice on the outside, roasted to finish in the oven. You want to take that to medium well, so still moist inside, but
right,
just about cooked through.
Mm-hmm.
And it does incredibly well with earthy ingredients, things like those the creamy lentils that you always make. Something like that with cod is amazing. Simple rice, a perlo, one of those low country dishes that
mm-hmm.
you know, where it's rice and beans and that sort of thing, can be terrific.
Yeah,
it can be very
actually,
good. With,
actually, Hop and John would be really good with cod, which is one of the most basic of all the perlo dishes.
My favorite is if you have a nice roasted piece like that, is the Vizcaíno sauce, which is really, you know, roasted tomato and onion, very slow cooked, a little bit of saffron, a little bit of garlic, a lot of very good olive oil, really good Vizcaíno sauce. That for a piece of roasted cod like that is spectacular. It's nice to have that little acidic edge of the tomato on that. And it's funny, the onions are not sharp, but they're not caramelized sweet either in that preparation. That I've always been a giant fan of that particular one. But the scrod, I think I might leave in the freezer.
Yeah,
but
the cod,
if you can get good fresh cod.
Of course, cod
you can
great
do really
fish.
Beautiful stuff.
Absolutely. I agree. Yeah, just had to get past that childhood experience.
I understand.
So what's yours, Tony? What's next on your hate
another
list?
Another dish I tried to get over, mm-hmm. where it's like I had it as a kid, didn't like it. Had it out of a can, didn't like it. Had it in a restaurant as a kid, didn't like it. Tried to have it in restaurants as an adult. Hated it. Clam chowder, but like that creamy clam chowder.
That's interesting. I have one that's similar to that.
Not that tomato-y mm-hmm. clam chowder, but that,
oh, no.
that creamy clam chowder. And it, you always end up with like these unbelievably, it's like the size of somebody's thumb, you know. And
rubber band.
About as hard as somebody's thumb that you're trying to bite through a clam.
Right, a rubber band clam, basically.
And the cream business doesn't have any flavor to it.
Well,
and
it usually has too much flour in it. That's usually the problem.
There's a bunch of big chunky potatoes in it. And
yeah, it's just awkward.
What do they do to that that make me hate it? That makes me hate it so much.
That? Well, I think the thing is the roux or the flour used in the soup, too. It's just like,
So how would you make one properly? Oh, how would you make one that I might actually like?
It's ironic that you just said that because I actually have a bag of clams that I am thinking about making a version of clam chowder with because I know it can be beautiful. So all you have to do is steam open the clams and save
that
liquor.
My first question is, what kind of clams did you get?
Well, I have little necks. So, of course, I'm using a tiny clam. I'm going to steam them open. And, I mean, the moment they're open, I'm going to get them out of that heat. And so I'll steam them open, white wine, bay leaf, thyme. And what I'll do is I'll work that liquid first. So white wine, bay leaf, thyme, and peppercorns, a little bit of water. It doesn't have to be all wine. And get that going, probably cook it for about 10, 15 minutes at a boil, and then pop the clams in, put a lid on it, steam them open. Like I said, the moment they begin to open, get them out of there so they don't overcook. And then that liquid becomes the base for the soup. And so obviously, you know, you have to what we do is let the clams sit with cornmeal and water, usually overnight. So that they clean themselves, basically. They ingest it and spit it out, for lack of any other more intelligent way of putting it.
It's and, pretty direct.
So that way you don't have much or any sand left in your stock. That's sort of the problem with working with some of the shellfish is the amount of what they eat has sand in it, obviously. So once your clams are open, pull them out of the shell and then just reserve them. You have to stop the cooking process. You need them to cool down quickly. I would just put them in the walk-in and because you can't rinse the water over them, obviously.
Or at home if you don't have a walk-in, your refrigerator.
Oh, yeah, that too. Right. I'm sorry. I've been cooking a long time. And
a walk-in.
Oh, gosh. I am putting two stainless steel work tables in my new kitchen at my new house. Mm-hmm. So my home
kitchen.
And Mrs.
Smith just put her clam chowder in her,
right, in her walk-in
closet, you know. So.
Oh, God. I never even thought of that. Oh, that's funny. So anyway, so in your refrigerator
Milona
while your
Blahnik,
clams.
Milona Blahnik, Christian Louboutin, clam chowder. Cindy Wolf said put it right here.
Jeez. No one would do that. All right. So once the clams are cooling down, you have that liquid. Let the liquid settle for a bit. And that way you can sort of pour it off of itself and don't use the last of it, which is where the stuff will settle.
So on the bottom, all the silty stuff.
Yeah.
You don't want that.
And then that liquid that you just poured off of that, now you need to put that through a cheesecloth and through a chinois, which is a fine mesh strainer.
Sort of decanting your broth.
Indeed. And then you can reduce it down some, and you don't need all of it. You won't need all that liquid. So you can take some of it and reduce it probably by half, and then put it in a pot with I would just use cream. Now, you could make a roux. So I'll tell you two different ways.
I'm not disbelieving you in any way.
Yeah. So I would just add that broth to cream and reduce it down. I would saute a very little bit of shallot and a little bit of onion and a very small dice in butter. And I would add that to it. And what you could do if you wanted to add a roux, if you want that sort of slightly thicker feeling, not through natural reduction, but through thickening with flour and butter, those shallots and onions, add a little bit of extra butter to that pan and just songer, which is just sprinkle a little bit of flour over the top of that, mix it all together, tighten it up enough that you're not seeing any fat coming through. And that will help to thicken it. You can add that. You can add your onion and shallot that way with the butter and the flour, and that will help to thicken. And then, you know, let everything reduce down. And I would add black pepper, because that's one of the things you look for in a clam chowder. Then I would do a brunoise of boiled potatoes. So brunoise is the smallest of dice. It's a very small dice. So you put a pot of water on with salt in it. You blanch off your Yukon Gold potato in a brunoise. You drain them. You cool them down. You set them aside. Your clams are set aside. Your potatoes are set aside. Everything's small and elegant and pretty and perfectly cooked and perfectly seasoned. And then you've got your soup base basically going, and when it's ready, I would actually saute one more set of onions and shallots. This is making it a little complicated, or you could have just done double the first time and only added half to your soup with the flour. And when you're ready to serve the soup, you strain that soup, you add in the new shallots and onions, you add the clams and the potatoes on pickup. The moment you're about to serve it to your guests, just bring it up to heat so it's hot, and you serve immediately. And I bet that would be pretty fun.
That sounds a lot nicer than the sort of boiled milk with erasers in it that I have been offended by so many times.
And nobody likes an eraser.
No, especially not for lunch. So what else is on your list?
Okay. Well, I did mention meatloaf, so we're going to have to go back to that.
Meatloaf.
I can't wait to hear how you're going to fix meat. Well, you know what? I know how to fix meatloaf, because in the end, meatloaf
is
simply...
Oh, don't let me...
you know, I'm not going to let you fix my meatloaf.
Yeah, I'll let you...
I'm going to fix my own meatloaf.
Physician, heal thyself. No. This is not how this game works.
All right. Okay. So I don't like meatloaf. And my mom used to put ketchup in there, which... Oh, and now we come back to these darn raw onions again.
Hey.
She would put raw onions in her meatloaf, and they would be gigantic. And then so they would never really be cooked.
Not as talented a cook. I mean, the big, like, chunky ones, the pokey onions. They stayed hard magically for like an hour in the oven.
Yeah. I don't even know how that's possible, but it would happen.
They did.
And I'm like, ugh. Yeah. And then she would pour ketchup
My grandmother was not as talented a cook.
Don't tell me she put boiled eggs in there.
No, but she did have a very special...
I would run screaming out of the house when I was a child. Your grandmother?
I loved her. I
love
pork.
She was awesome, but...
I love pork.
Maybe
I love pork chops.
Cook.
And, you know, she has some Southern heritage. She's like, I can cook pork chops. I know how to do this.
I think her mother was the Southern cook, not her.
That's correct.
Her mother was the great Southern cook. Yeah, your grandmother, your great-grandmother was a great cook, it sounds like.
It was DNA. It was not skills that she inherited. and loved the pieces, but...
Absolutely. Wonderful lady.
But there was this dish. There were these pork chops, and they were cut so thin...
Oh, boy. Well, that's a bad start.
And they're like, well done before you cook it. Okay. How do you do that?
That's tough. Right? Well done before
it's
you cook
much,
it.
It's a little bit
that's
like
thin.
They're so thin. They're like the tongues on sneakers. You know what I mean? When I was a kid, they're like, well, how do you cut it that thin? Even with the bone and everything. But she would have those, and she put them in a baking pan, and she would cover them with. It was 1/3 tomato soup, 1/3 mushroom soup, and 1/3 Pepsi Cola.
No way. That is not possible. I'm sorry.
Ladies and gentlemen, our engineer just recoiled across the room. Pepsi Cola, okay?
I don't believe you.
There's a reason why, like, simple crusty bread with good olive oil makes me so happy.
Oh, my
okay?
gosh. I wish we were doing a live show right now because I want to hear the calls about that.
Well, we'll have
to do the people
one, okay.
that say, oh, we did do that too, or people that are like,
Coca-Cola
what?
Coca-Cola was not right. RC Cola was definitely not right.
Oh, my. Pepsi-Cola.
Pepsi-Cola.
As my grandfather called it.
Like Pep Up, you know?
Okay.
The, yeah, Pepsi-Cola, that was, that those three ingredients, that was the magic sauce that you poured over these pork chops. And then, as thin as they were, as thin as the tongues on your Converse sneakers, right? She'd bake them for like 45 minutes in this sauce. And it would stick all around the edges of it and pretty much become this caramelized stuff. Mm. And if you looked in the oven, I mean, I would sort of tell my brothers, like, come take a look in the oven, see the light on, right? And you look in there and you see it bubbling. And it's like there's the carbonation and the sugars are happening.
Oh,
and these poor little pork chops that sort of like float up and kind of like you see a little hand wave out of there like, save me. Anyway. When we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, we'll do something a little more.
We're having a highly intelligent conversation about food right now.
Yeah, it's called food therapy. We'll get into a little more serious fixes of dishes that are a little less scary maybe on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
All right. Now that we've,
I think we got a little off track.
We're supposed to be arguing about who's going to be fixing the meatloaf.
All right.
That
well,
Cindy
I'm
doesn't
let you
like
go ahead
from her childhood.
You can fix a meatloaf, and then I'll say how I would fix meatloaf.
Of course.
You're going to get my version, too. Go ahead.
I mean, isn't it all about what you're actually putting in it, right?
Oh.
Because all you're doing is baking
or what
it.
You're starting with, and then exactly, what you're putting
what you're,
in it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. What are you starting with? I mean, I had the meatloaf when I was a kid, too, where you see, like, the boiled eggs sitting
gross.
In there. And,
oh, gosh, I hate boiled eggs.
Or pimentos sitting in there, that sort of thing.
Oh, no, I don't like those either.
Yeah.
No, oh, boy.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, all those things.
You're like, I love all food until I ask you to start listening.
Next thing you're going to say are crab apples. You remember when they used to garnish every single plate in a restaurant with, like, some sort of frilly lettuce and a crab apple?
Yeah.
Like, why did restaurants do that? Where did
the first
that even
place I worked
from?
In, like, bought a million number 10
What's
cans
up with
crab apples?
I mean, where did
the shame is?
Actually, I would like, as a serious question, actually, I would like the answer to that.
It is traditional this time of the year in the southwest of France, crab apple tarts, because they're very early fruit in the southwest, and they're super good.
What does that have to do with good. American restaurants putting slices of canned crab apples on lettuce wedges on your plate or a leaf of lettuce.
Huh. That I don't think it has anything to do with it. This is just me
but
trying to be positive.
But at least there's something good about crab apples.
This is just me trying to be positive.
Okay.
Meatloaf.
Okay. Got it.
All right. The question is, what would you like your meatloaf actually be made from? Would you like it to be from lamb? Would you like it to be veal?
I would.
Lamb?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, no. I want it from a combination of three meats.
Of course you
That's
do.
What I really want.
I mean, for me, it's got to be more interesting.
Yeah.
And you're essentially making one giant forcemeat, right?
Right. Exactly.
You know, so that's the question is, what is the origin and what are the flavors of
well, what you have you're to come up with an American meatloaf if you're going to replace meatloaf, though, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, all I want to do is make basically the same farce that you would for the caille that you see in the south of France, you
Yum.
Know?
Yeah.
And even right down to the Swiss chard. You know, so the caille literally means little birds, and also there's a slang where it means little stones. And it's sort of like giant meatballs that you make. And I think you could just make meatloaf the same way. And it's usually pork and lamb, and there are eggs in there, and there is breadcrumb in there.
Yeah, but you're talking about like a whole egg, not like a boiled egg. Or did it have
I'm talking about eggs mixed into
it. Yeah, yeah, it didn't have boiled eggs.
Mixed into the farce, yeah.
Sure, it's a binding agent.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
The eggs and any melted fat that you're going to use, you know, you actually mix those guys and a little bit of neutral oil and whatever seasoning that you have, and then you have your ground meat. In this case, it'd be half lamb, half pork. And in the case of that particular dish, it would be a lot of Swiss chard that was cooked off and dried really well. And then ground also.
Okay, then, so it gets ground and gosh, those
and then
are
working,
so good.
And working all of that in, And you have to season that pan. To me, you season that pan with a lot of garlic. But you cook it slowly, get it very nice and sweet. And then you basically rub the pan. If you have a nice heavy pan, copper pan, steel pan, whatever it is, it's a good big thick roasting pan, rub that down. Actually get that in the oven for a few moments with the garlic, cool it back down, get the garlic out of there. But you season that pan, then go in with your farce. And cover that and cook that. You could cook it in a water bath if you wanted to. If you had a lot of eggs and you're going to make it very rich, but I'd rather not. I'd rather, to me, I'd rather
like
more rustic.
And, yeah.
And a little bit crunchy around the edges and that sort of thing.
Is it wrapped in caul fat?
It is wrapped in caul fat.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think I remember seeing caul fat on the outside.
It's nicer not to have it in caul fat.
I was going
to
say,
I'd rather have it in that roasting pan.
I agree.
And when I say roasting pan, not loaf pan, because of the,
an open roasting pan that you would roast a bird in. Yeah, I agree.
Exactly. And you make that relatively thin compared to what meatloaf would be. And then you can control the cooking of it much better instead of it being like completely assassinated on the outside and a little bit under or no real texture to the inside. And then the questions are, what are the garnishes for it? And did you make a sauce? Like, did you make a lamb reduction sauce? You know, did you make some kind of pistou? You know, or maybe tapenade would be nice as a garnish for that. And I think you need a salad with a lot of olives, a nice Provençal salad with a lot of chicory and sweet roasted peppers and that sort of thing. And you have that and the hot slices of the, basically the caille that's been turned into your meatloaf. But there's my meatloaf proposal.
I love the idea of making the meatballs and cooking them in tomato with saffron and a little stock, you know, just really allowing that.
Oh, you mean just blowing up the whole thing and just making meatballs.
Yeah, I love that. Or making meatloaf like kebab.
It's like the
is one of my favorite things to make at home.
The first thing
you
talked about are like the albondigas we used to make.
Albondigas,
with tomatoes and saffron and garlic.
Oh, my gosh, I love that. I love that. Yeah, it's so good. So that's Spanish, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, everybody's culture has something like that.
Are you ready for the next thing on my list?
I am. What you got?
Orange sherbet.
Oh. Okay. Well, that's easy. Yeah, I get that, too. I never liked orange sherbet when I was a kid. I mean, obviously,
so the difference between sherbet and sorbet is...
Well, that was manufactured, probably, what you had. I mean, I'm not going to say the place where you most likely had that when you were little. I mean, yes, I guess you could have gotten it at the grocery, too, but... you know, I think that probably had a little bit of dairy product in it, which is not really, you know, I mean, I guess that is a sherbet, but...
There's your difference. There's dairy in sherbet and there's not in sorbet.
Not typically in sorbet. And that's what I would do. I would just make it like an amazing, fresh citrus and probably would do orange with lime and to balance it out because of the inherent sweetness of the orange. And you have to have a certain amount of sugar to make a sorbet work anyway.
Cara oranges that we've gotten recently are so sweet and good. That with lime would be nice.
Yeah, and blood oranges. I mean, you could do a whole combination of different types of oranges, and you could garnish it with fresh oranges. And
I always wish there were – see, this is – maybe it's a male thing too. Just like ice cream, I like ice creams with stuff in them.
Ah.
I wish that there were like fillets or candied pieces of orange peel or something in that.
In it.
Yeah.
Not just a garnish. Yeah.
Yeah. That for me is always kind of like – It's the difference in textures that makes it more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Besides the fact that I didn't like the taste of it, it was also dull.
Yeah, I just don't like the dairy in it. It seems so processed. I think that's probably why.
It was the only time I ever heard you say you didn't like the dairy in something.
Boy,
Miss, I would just use cream. I think that's going to be.
I can't wait to make that clam chowder now.
Well, good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What else is on your list?
Scalloped oysters. That's why I said when you said clam chowder, I'm like, oh, that's funny because I have scalloped oysters on my list. And this is another thing that my dear mother made that, I mean, even my sister wouldn't eat. And everybody in my family would eat everything except for me. I was very picky. And
hot oysters, you better get it just right.
Well, that's the thing.
Quick.
It would bake too long. That's the whole thing. And that was another thing she would pick up when we went to York. She would get the oyster crackers, which we all love to eat. So we all love the oyster crackers. Those are, you know, which were fun when you were a kid. But it was just the fact that she cooked it so long. And, you know, she was just, again, I'm not going to.
So it's essentially with like cream and crumbled up crackers on
it? I actually think she used milk. So I think it was probably milk, butter, oysters and crackers. And now I'm going to have to ask her because I'm not positive about that because I certainly never asked her how she made it because I was certainly never going to make it. But I have a feel. Oh, and I bet she put some raw onions in there. Just one more.
Those big angular pieces that stick out and catch you right in the gums, right? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, man. Yeah. Don't ever give me a raw onion.
Well, it's any kind of hot oyster, to me, it's the same kind of thing. It's like you have to have a beautiful product, of course, mm-hmm. but you have to be really thoughtful about what you're going to put on top of there. And the salinity of it is powerful, and the flavor is powerful, and the texture is significant.
Well, I think that might be the sad thing about the dish is that I know she loves oysters. So, of course, she was getting the best oysters she could find. So I'm sure they were excellent oysters. It's just the cooking time that really fouled it up.
Yeah, I think using something, making some kind of fantastic cream that's almost like a puree with a lot of flavor, you know, maybe it sounds silly, but it's like when you make, keep wanting to say bacala. The French dish with the salt cod and the potato.
Brandade.
And brandade, thank you. When you make brandade, just like don't do the salt cod, but think about the rest of the mixture, the garlic, the potato, and maybe it's saffron that you want to add in there instead. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Something like that. That, and you need a little bit of acidity. It's like a drop of vinegar on the oyster, a little bit of that. And just gratin, just enough to gratinate it.
Yeah. That would be really good.
Just for a moment. And I think that could be nice. You don't want it to be like pasty on there, but I think it would just be creamy that's a little bit thicker and actually kind of hangs on to something. I've never been fond of like a lot of Rockefeller versions that you end up with this like slimy spinach on oysters that have been cooked too long. Mm-hmm. That's not so nice.
No.
So I don't know I've never quite figured out what the scalloped thing is.
Yeah, I've never understood. So how is it scalloped? My mom.
I'm just always kind of like escalope is the term for a slice of something. You're not slicing the oysters. So you could just do maybe it's a slice of raw onion. You lay on top of that and you just bake it, right?
I don't know.
All right, on my list, I don't know that you're going to want to deal with this. I love a lot of Mexican food.
Me too.
Enchiladas. Of all the different versions of like playing with tortillas to make something, enchiladas, I've never had enchiladas that weren't like too beany. That wasn't like the assassinated beans with limited flavor and too much of some spice, maybe anato or something, that just dominated the thing. And it was like heavy and sticky and wet and no thanks.
Well, I think that's the whole point then, is to make great beans that you actually love, and that's easy to do. So, you know, with the particular style of cooking, I think I would probably cook the black beans with onion, a little bit of onion, shallot, garlic, and add some good chili peppers and just let them do their thing and season them well. I mean, you can't salt beans until the end. So, and then season them at the end, and I probably a little tomato paste in there as well, and maybe you know, right as you're ready to plate, you're adding freshly chopped cilantro to it. And then I hate to say this, but in this case, I also would garnish with some raw onion. I just wouldn't eat it. And I think, you know, and with that particular dish, you have a very specific sauce, I guess. So, you know, however you make that sauce, execute it beautifully.
There are a million sauces and there's a million mm-hmm. other things that are part of the filling sometimes.
Yeah, I think you just have to get the beans right.
But it always seems like, yeah, the beans always seem like the error in the thing. They never feel like it's always the refried bean thing, and there's not a lot happening there.
Mm-hmm. Well,
what else is on your list that I can? I think you're right. It's just like solve the beans and the rest of it.
Yeah, then that would be really good. The only other thing, and as you were saying, dishes, and I said, well, I thought about items. Was for me the other one is, besides olives in the can, was canned asparagus. And I'll add canned mushrooms to that. I hated mushrooms when I was a kid because, well, actually, I guess the mushrooms came in a jar. And they were, talk about the word slimy, they were slimy. You couldn't make me eat one of those mushrooms. And the asparagus was just not nice coming out of a can. So
asparagus out of a can, I'm with you on that. I struggle. I'm not sure how to do that well or how to work with that well. I like pickled asparagus, especially a little bit spicy. And I love pickled mushrooms, all different kinds of pickled mushrooms. And even just like big buttons.
Yeah.
You know, pickled well can be incredibly good. And they're a great garnish for all kinds of things.
Definitely.
Especially, I mean, that's, you know, I'm a big fan of mortadella.
Yes.
Mortadella with jardiniera and pickled mushrooms, like big fat slices of like white button mushrooms that have been pickled, you know, and the jardiniera on the mortadella.
Yeah,
and
that,
just like hot,
that's some
hot,
kind of fun.
Hot toast, bruschetta.
Oh,
that
gosh,
and a green salad,
right,
awesome
now.
Lunch, right?
Oh, yeah, that would be so good right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe you need a piece of cheese.
Definitely.
Maybe you need a glass of something.
Maybe.
You know.
I think that's... Well, and the other thing about mushrooms, too, for me, is that not only do I work hard at making sure I cook my mushrooms perfectly.
The world has a lot of bad mushrooms.
Yeah. Things. You have to know how to cook mushrooms. The whole thing with cooking them is working out that natural water, high water content.
That just means patience.
It's what it is. It takes a long time to saute mushrooms.
Most of the stuff we're talking about are things where people are taking a shortcut or reading a recipe and trying to get it, just get it done instead of thinking through all the, it's the care in it.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's not cooking that, is a commitment.
It's
a
not
time
that,
commitment.
It's not the dishes that your mother didn't care about them, but you didn't know about them.
Sure. And my mother was also trying to feed a family of four kids
and get it done in a short
husband.
Space of time.
Of course. And I think also with button mushrooms in particular, I absolutely love them when they're really fresh, sliced thin and raw. And so I think that's what's kind of cool about the whole thing of disliking them when I was a kid and they were in that jar. I mean, you really can do so many different things with mushrooms. It would be a shame to allow, you know, and I think that's also part of this conversation is, you know, you have to outgrow these thoughts that you had when you're a kid. You can't allow that to shape how you eat for the rest of your life because palates, well, that was, I had also started to say at one point, I was talking to a friend of mine who has kids and we were saying, you know, I said, you know, at some point when they were really little, they didn't like it, but maybe as they got a little bit older, if they would just try it again, but definitely when they become adults.
My daughter always says, you could try it. You know, if the 2-year-old's sure. got that figured out, maybe.
Yeah. So that's it. I mean, it's, I think you just have to give things a chance because all of our palates change with time, all of us. And you are going to begin to like things more than, you know, maybe you would have when you were younger. But also it is the execution and quality of product. You know, that's the whole thing, what we're talking about now.
I don't know that I'll get over the pork chops with the Pepsi-Cola, though.
That's not, yeah. That's just
I don't think
even a possibility.
That's not reasonable.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for listening to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And if you want to download previous programs, you can go to the WYPR website and look up our podcasts. If you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Twitter, Chef Cindy Wolf, or on Instagram, Chef Wolf.
And if you want to send us an email with any questions, comments about this or any of the programs, it's foremanwolf@wypr.org. Thanks so much.
And have a happy Sunday.